Hey Mike, check out these new lyrics I wrote. The song's called Shelter from Oblivion. I'm telling you, this is gonna be a hit.
All right, let's hear it.
I see you every night under neon lights, walking through the city streets. You're a dream in sight. I've got your number, but you don't know my name. I watch you from a distance, playing a secret game.
Dave, that sounds kinda creepy. Like, are you stalking this girl?
What? No way. It's romantic. Let me read you more. You move like a mystery, a silhouette in the rain. Caught up in your spell, I'm addicted to the pain. You don't see me, but I know where you go. Tracing every step in the night, so slow.
Dude, that's even creepier. Are you following her around with duct tape and chloroform?
No, no, you're not getting it. Here, just listen to the chorus. It's amazing.
What followed was the greatest 80s chorus ever put to paper. A thundering mix of hope and boundless romantic yearning, so powerful it could erase the last 40 seconds of memory in your brain.
I have forgotten everything you said up until that hook.
See, I told you.
A Bon Jovi song.
A Bon Jovi song or a Bruce Springsteen. It's the same thing with someone and Diane. Here's a story.
Here's Jack and Diane.
That's Don Henley or someone I got. Like,
yeah.
I always thought that was like a either Bon Jovi or Mick or.
Yeah, if you asked me like in a street interview, I probably would have said it was Bruce Springsteen.
Yeah, it just doesn't. I'm like, oh, a lot of these hits you picked out, I'm like, I remember the music video as a kid, but I don't remember the music video.
Yeah.
It's like after rewatching some of these, I was like, wow, I had never listened to the lyrics. I've never put any of that together. And
hi, everybody. I'm Matt.
I'm Andy.
Hey, and welcome back to The Shelter. We are going to do an interesting show today. It's an idea that I had a while back when I was mowing my lawn. And Andy has been gracious enough to kind of decide to work this out with me.
I wasn't on board right away. I was a little, but he sold me on it. So I think he'll sell you on it.
Yeah. And I totally understand if this just isn't your cup of tea. I had the concept of taking 80s songs that everyone knows the chorus to, everyone knows the hook, that it's that thing that when they play it at a karaoke bar, when someone chooses it, the whole bar is going crazy.
But before
right?
the hook, you weren't paying attention at all.
Yeah. And that's kind of what I realized is we're both grown men born in the 80s. We've heard all these songs. You guys have all heard all these songs. And even now doing the research for this show, I can say that I have not fully absorbed the actual lyrics in between the chorus for most of these songs.
And some of them are dark.
Yeah. Some of them we are going to ruin for you today forever.
But it is interesting. The people who wrote these songs were very self-aware of what they were writing. So there's a little hope in these lyrics.
I feel like some of them were. I don't know.
Well, yeah, there's a few there. I don't know.
Well, and there's a couple we'll get into where we subscribe so much meaning to the song. And it turns out that like, yeah, you know what? I was just kind of goofing off.
Yeah, they themselves are like, hey, I got this concept. I don't know if you guys are into it, but hey, let me write a song. And they're like, you know what? Give it a hook and I think it'll work.
Yeah. So we're going to go through these. What we're going to do basically, if I can explain it correctly, is we're going to go back and forth and we're going to read the lyrics to a popular 80s song. And the other person is just going to react like they've never heard the song before.
Like, oh my.
And we're going to see how this ends up working out. I'm hoping it's going to end up being really funny. But we will see. And if it's not, then we're going to scrap this whole thing. You will have never heard this. And we will probably be talking about our top five television villains.
You know, like it's famous for saying, like when you're making videos and stuff, you're like, fix it in post, fix it in post. You could say the 80s was all about, we'll fix it with the hook.
Okay. So Andy, why don't you start right down there? Everyone will probably be able to know this song right away, but if they don't, you know, we're going to go through a little bit of history and some fun facts about a few of these songs.
Shelter from Oblivion stepped out for Zagnut Bars and Slurpees.
Hey, Ginny. Ginny, who I can turn to. You give me something I can hold on to. I know you think I'm like all the other guys before, who saw your name and number on the wall.
What? What now?
Ginny, I got your number. I need to make you mine. Ginny, don't change your number. 8675309.
Wait, hold on. But he got the number off a wall?
Bathroom straw? Like, I don't know, maybe.
Because you had me at the beginning, because he's like, okay, I get it. Jenny, he's having a fight with Jenny.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Maybe he had a fight with his girlfriend, Candace, and Jenny is like a good friend, like a confidant.
Give me something, right? To hold on to. I totally get you're that. There for me. I want to make you mine.
Yes. That makes them. Oh, because he realized Candace is a bitch and Jenny's been the one the whole time.
But, plot twist. This guy's just sitting in a john, you know, some number on a stall.
That's where I pause, because once you got there and I realized he doesn't even know Jenny, that's where it starts getting a little weird for me.
Oh, and it gets weirder because look, Jenny, you're the girl for me. Oh, you don't know me, but you make me so happy. I tried to call you before, but I lost my nerve.
What?
I tried my imagination, but I was disturbed. Ginny, I got your number.
Oh, no.
I need to make you mine. Ginny, don't change your number. 8675309.
Oh, buddy. I think this guy maybe should leave Jenny alone.
You know what?
I don't know if being disturbed, you know, like thinking about her, I think that maybe he's not in the right place to be making a phone call to a stranger.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you fall in love with the first girl that talks to you on the phone. This guy. Oof. This guy. Okay.
So what? Now, who wrote this song?
So this is Tommy Two Tones, 1981, 8675309, Ginny.
Yes. And by the way, that number, as everyone probably knows, has been changed by hundreds of people.
And now we know
over
why.
The years.
Now we know why.
There is a great quote that I want to read from somebody that I found. They said, "When we'd first get calls at 2 or 3 in the morning, my husband would answer the phone. He can't hear too well. They'd ask for Jenny, and he'd say, 'Jimmy doesn't live here anymore.'" Tommy Two Tone was the one who had the record. I'd like to get a hold of his neck and choke him. And that was from Lorraine Burns in Alabama, who had formerly had that number.
But the hook, 8675309.
Yeah.
I mean, and how many people only hear the hook when they listen to that song?
Yeah, it's fascinating.
And when you start to listen to the song, you're like, oh, this is phone sex. It's the 80s, 1-900. You know, I sure. Got your number. You're like, oh, this makes sense. A phone sex. So I was like, oh, what could they do for a music video with this?
Well, and yes, and we're going to get there. But what's even worse to me is the fact that it's not even phone sex. This man is about to harass a stranger,
yeah,
who was victimized by another person by having her number put in a bathroom. Like, so he's actually perpetuating like a pretty bad situation.
Yeah, it's not
this
good.
Poor lady. And now he is going to be like, well, you know, her number's on the wall for a good time. Yeah. Yeah, let's call this loose goose.
And meanwhile, he's like, hey, Ginny, don't change your number. I need to make you mine. Ginny wants to change her number.
Yeah, no, I'm sure Jenny has already changed her number.
Who is this? Mrs. Wilson from the telephone company. I understand you're having problems with an obscene phone caller.
Yes, I am. I'm sorry, Mrs. Wilson, but this is driving me crazy. I've had my number changed twice already. I'm a divorced woman. Please help me.
People always ask, was there a Jenny? Was there really a Jenny? And two of the band members over the years had different stories about saying, yeah, oh yeah, I used to date Jenny and like I got mad at her one time and I put the number on the wall. It's like, and this other guy had a different story about dating a Jenny. And I didn't go into any detail about those, but then years later, I think it was 2004, Alex Call just straight up said, yeah, there's no Jenny. I made up the number. I was in my backyard and I was trying to write this song and I needed a name. And so I had a name, I picked one.
And I needed the greatest hook of all time.
Well, and it's like, and I needed the number to fit my chorus. So he goes, I just made up the number. The number's not from anywhere.
I can see him like singing numbers in the phone book. Like, no, that doesn't work. That doesn't work.
Yeah.
987, no, that's, and then 8675.
Which is funny because, well, it's a California. He's in California and it's not even a California number.
Yeah. And he's sitting there like 8675308. Ah, yeah. That doesn't really work. I'm done. I'm going to just, let me get one more shot.
Well, and then what happened is, so he's tooling around on this thing and he's trying to put something together on this little four track he had. And one of his bandmates comes over and I think the guy, I don't know if it was a bandmate, but it was the co-writer who ended up being the co-writer on the song. And he kind of spread out the lyrics for him. And he's like, this is what I'm thinking. And he goes, oh, dude, this is like a girl's number on a bathroom stall. And Alex says, exactly. Yes, that is what this is. You bring up the video for this, which is an interesting take on the song.
Yeah, because, you know, you listen to the song, you read the lyrics, or you start to listen to it for the first time all the way through. You're like, oh, it's the 80s phone sex. This makes sense. So what are they going to do for a music video?
The music video that I saw, you got Tommy Two Tone and his best friend. Tommy Two Tone's lead singer, I think his name is Alex Call.
And you would only know that if you looked it up for a podcast, but totally. Okay.
But, and they're sitting at a table in this nebulous bar. You know those 80s video bars where it's like there's the bar and then there's tables and then it's just black everywhere else.
Yeah, it's a sound stage. There's a few lights.
There's a nice blonde lady at the bar. She's making eyes at Tommy Two Tone. I'm just going to call him Tommy Two Tone.
Yeah.
And then he's kind of like,
call Two-Tone
what's, Johnny. What's weird is he kind of looks at her, looks back at his buddy, and almost gives like a ew face. Like, this lady's good looking, and he's sort of like, ooh, this uggo's checking me out. Like, that's a face I got.
Who are you, Tommy? Okay. Yeah.
So she walks over, she gives him the number. And so now he's got the number.
Which completely changes the whole dynamic of the song.
Exactly.
Because Jeannie did not give that number to this guy.
That's why I thought it was weird immediately.
So I'm like, you're going to take the creep out of the video? What's going on here?
Yeah.
But no.
Oh,
no.
Don't worry. They changed how he got the number, but they kept the creep in. So basically from there, what he ended up going to...
Her house.
Well, he went to a psychologist first.
Yeah.
And he's on the couch and he's confessing a bunch of disturbed material to the other member of the band who's pretending to be a psychologist, which is funny because it's like you shouldn't probably get your psychoanalysis from your bandmates.
Yeah.
They're probably just gonna
agree. Well, especially when he's writing down the number 8675309.
Yeah, he's also writing the number down, this poor gal. So but then Tommy ends up going to the lady's house and he's looking through her window. And then what happens? She is with the friend.
And Tommy is being a peeping Tom
creep.
Yes,
he is looking through the window. They see him. The police come and drag him away.
Which for the 80s, I'm glad that was pretty progressive and self-aware that they knew that the act of this guy being a peeping Tom was wrong.
Yes.
Because not everyone in the 80s, movies or videos,
it could have gone
that, you know,
a whole different way where he's taking Polaroids and putting them up in his apartment. That would have not been weird, to be honest.
In the 80s.
Like, right, yeah.
But we are glad to see him get hauled off by the cops.
Yeah, the music video ends with him in a mugshot and his number, right? His that number they always make you hold up is 8675309.
Yeah.
So. Just absolute darling of a video. But what you're going to realize tonight is a lot of these weird video or a lot of these weird songs have videos
that are the opposite
that mitigate the harm that the song would do if it was left
because
alone.
Unlike the audience, the people making the video were aware what the lyrics were.
Yeah, they
and
probably
half of us were just like,
songs.
No, we got the hook and then we're gone.
Yeah.
You have fun with that.
But there's multiple songs for sure that we're going to go over where the video changes the dynamic of the song. Danny, I got your number. I need to make you mine. Danny, don't change your number. 8675309. 8675309. 8675309. few stolen moments is all that we shared. You've got your family, and they need you there. Though I try to resist being last on your list, but no other man's gonna do. I'm saving all my love for you.
Oh, okay.
Isn't that nice?
Oh.
Poetry. It's not very easy living alone. My friends try to tell me, find a man of your own.
Oh.
But each time I try, I just break down and cry. 'Cause I'd rather be home feeling blue. So I'm saving all of my love for you.
Well, that's not good.
This story has taken a bit of a turn. 'Cause I would open with like, okay, you have to be with your family. I get it. You're a family person. Maybe your mom's sick, right? You know, or you have one of your kids that needs your help. And then she goes into, I'm assuming it's a she goes into, you know, getting a man of your own. And I'm like, wait, what now?
Oh, that shared moment, that quick shared moment. I gotcha.
Oh, the plot thickens. You used to tell me we'd run away together. Love gives you the right to be free. You said, be patient, just wait a little longer. But that's just an old fantasy.
Well, see, now I understand why her friends are saying, you know what? This is not healthy.
Oh, no.
Move on. Go run.
I've got to get ready. Just a few minutes more. I've got to get that old feeling. Or I'm going to get that old feeling when you walk through the door. Because tonight is the night for a feeling. All right. We'll be making love the whole night through. That's presumptuous, to be honest.
You know what, Bart? Or just, you know.
Man, you understand. All right. You get what I'm saying. Ladies, honestly, you get what I'm saying too. Really? The whole night through? Really? All right.
This is a love, an anti-love song? On myself. Love song? I'm not sure.
So I'm saving all my love. Yes, I'm saving all my love. Yes, I'm saving all my love for you. No other woman is going to love you more because tonight is the night that I'm feeling all right. We'll be making love the whole night through. I'm saving all my love for you, etc.
See, when you hear the song, when you hear the lyrics and you read it, you're like, oh no, this, you know, she needs to move on. She needs to find another man. This isn't good. But when Whitney sings it, you're with her. You're with her there. She knows how to turn it into a love song.
I'm going to tell you that up until very recently, I thought this was a legit straightforward love song. Like, I would have put this song into like a wedding video.
There would have been that one aunt like,
I did not know this was about trifling. I did not know that at all. But yeah, it's a great song though.
But it's like really great. I mean, Whitney Houston knows how to just get you on her side
it's crazy.
Bring the love out, the passion, the love. I mean, this is.
Yeah, because if you're not paying attention at all to this song, and especially with the hook, right?
This is the song that like grandma and grandpa are holding hands, and this is a sweet song you put on. They're not listening to the whole. They're just like, oh, this is a nice hook in the 80s.
Dude, this flies under the radar completely for me up until like I said, very recently, just because it never gives off an unromantic tone. It's all very, you know, vivacious and sensual. And I don't know, I guess maybe there's something that has to do with just being adults.
Yeah. I mean, right? There's definitely some ladies out there being like, these men just don't listen. This is another example of men don't listen.
Yeah. Like
we're hearing the hook. It sounds romantic. We're driving along in the car. We don't even pay attention to the rest of the song.
Well, and that's one of the reasons, actually. I'm glad you bring that up because that's one of the reasons I wanted to do a show like this is because I would always examine the lyrics when my wife would listen to music. And I'd be like, what is she? Why is he saying that? Like, that's a weird thing to say. And she's like, I didn't listen to any of that. She's like, the music is good. and you know, the chorus is really cool. And she's like, I don't really like tune into like the lyrics.
You know, the only way you could probably listen to Drake.
Yeah. And it's like, that's the only thing I listen to. Lyrics like ruin songs for me, even good ones, because I'm so focused in on the words they are saying and trying to make a coherent story out of them.
But 80s song, Kryptonite, you don't hear the lyrics.
No.
The hooks are so good that
They should come with a warning.
They really should. Just
listen, don't think too much about this, okay? Yeah. And this was one of those songs. And the funny thing is when you watch the video, did you end up watching this video?
I did not watch this video, no.
Oh, bro.
I know.
It's actually really good. So in the video, Whitney, she's in the studio, and clearly her studio producer and her are having not an affair, but like she has like clear feelings for him, and he seems to sort of have feelings for her.
Kind of has that bodyguard feel.
A little bit.
Okay, I remember the video. Now that you're, see, this is the thing about the 80s. Once you start talking about a music video, you're like, okay, I don't remember the name. I don't remember the song. Once you start talking about the video, I'm like, separately, oh, okay, I do remember this video.
I don't know. It kind of gets you on her side, because even though in the song, if you just take it as it is, it seems like she is in fact like going forward with this affair, that she is sort of a trifling lady. But in the video, they sort of mitigate that by making it seem more like she has unrequited love, and that the guy and his wife fight a lot, yeah, and she sort of understands him, and they have a good working relationship. But at the end of the video, he chooses his wife. They end up meeting up for a date, and he kind of stands her up, or more likely, they're all going out to celebrate, and he leaves the party to be with his wife. And so that's how they kind of
save that. But let's not make this a noble guy, because he's promised, we'll go away on vacation. We're going to get out of here. I'm going to be free. Well, this is no good guy. This is no... Whitney, you can do better. Maybe not Bobby, but you can do better.
Well, also, are we dealing with an unreliable narrator? Like, this is from her point of view, so...
Wow. I got to take her side on that. I mean... She knows how to sing. She got me. She got me. I'm sorry, Matt. I'm on her side.
Here, the hard thing is, even if this was about straight up cheating on your husband, it's such a good song that you might just have to let it go.
Yeah.
Whitney Houston's Saving All My Love for You, 1985. But no.
Once upon a time, not so long ago, Tommy used to work on the docks. Union's been on strike. He's down on his luck. It's tough. So tough.
I hope good for him.
But Gina works the diner all day. Working for her man, she brings home her pay. For love. For love.
Okay.
She says, we gotta hold on to what we've got. It doesn't make a difference if we make it or not. We got each other, and that's a lot for love. We'll give it a shot. Whoa, we're halfway there. Whoa, living on a prayer.
The lyric sheet says whoa.
Take my hand, we'll make it, I swear. Whoa, living on a prayer.
Who is that? Is that Tommy saying it to her, though?
That's Tom. See, yeah, sometimes I feel like the narrative changes. I think it starts off with Gina.
Is that Gina saying it to Tommy?
Gina, she says we got to hold on to what we got.
Okay.
Later on, Tommy is one.
Okay, so the song starts with a couple of people seem to be down on their luck, right? Yeah. So she's working at a diner. He's working on the docks, but the union's on strike, so he's not working.
Yeah.
So he used to work on the docks.
Well, see, it starts off with her.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's the one saying, we're going to make it. I make it, I swear.
Okay, because they're living off.
But then we get more of the story. We're a little deeper in.
Can I talk real quick about... Don't you love how in the 1980s you could live off diner wages?
You know?
Take me back.
Well, it's 1986, so, you know, the union's on strike, but this is the Reagan administration, so I'm not pulling for him getting his union job back. Sorry, Tommy. This is tough.
The one time we're going to touch politics on this show.
And here's how we can tell, because the strike has gone on. Tommy got his six-string in hock. Oof. Now he's holding in what he used to make tuck. So tough.
Oh, so no.
So tough. And in the song, you hear the guitar. This is a guy in the 80s. Doesn't know how to talk about his emotion. Doesn't have that mental health.
Yeah.
He would just play the guitar to get all that out. But when Tommy doesn't have a guitar.
Well, so how is he, because I'm assuming, so he's working on the dock, he has a six string. So was he trying to be a rock and roll guy?
Well, that's how he got his emotions out. That's why Gina fell for him.
Except that now.
But now Tommy doesn't have a guitar.
Doesn't so have how is he going to be doesn't have a rock guitar.
So Gina dreams of running away.
Oh, crap.
When she cries in the night, Tommy whispers, baby, it's okay.
Oh.
Someday.
Shit.
Now
this took
Tommy's
a turn.
Saying, we got to hold on to what we got. It doesn't make a difference if we make it or not. We got each other, and that's a lot for love. We'll give it a shot.
Oh, no.
Whoa, we're halfway there. Whoa, we're living on a prayer. Take my hand. We'll make it, I swear. Whoa, living on a prayer. So these two are really, they're both going through hard times to make this work.
Yeah.
You know.
But is there any more to that song? That's how the song ends?
No.
That's how it
then
concludes?
Then it kind of goes more, we keep going through the chorus. So.
But we leave this song with the two characters.
Still wishing on a
prayer. Crying and having no ability to become a rock star because he's gotten rid of his.
This song is 80, I'm going to say it's 86% like chorus.
Wow.
There's.
I'm just saying that's how we leave it. We leave the whole story with Gina wanting to run away and crying every night. And there's not even a bit of hope in the actual lyrics outside of them having
now,
love.
Now, if you're a fan of Bon Jovi, if you're a fan, you're like, you know what? You do know that he comes from working class. His wife, Deborah, stood by his side. They did make it to the other side. He became a rock star, and they were together, I believe.
Okay.
So.
But that's him. This is Tommy.
It's not Johnny. It's been changed to Tommy.
Yeah.
Tommy. You know?
Well, I think so. If nobody knows, all right, that is Bon Jovi's "Living on a Prayer," 1986.
Great hook. Great chorus. Like
that. This is one of those bangers that
closes
again,
out
oh,
bars
it destroys
and
a bar. When it's a Friday and people just got paid and it's probably what, like around 11 o'clock at night and the drinks have been flowing. If this goes on any jukebox, that the roof is going off.
And this song's a little different because we all know those first two verses. We know Tommy used to work on the docks. We know Gina works at the diner all day. We've heard those. We remember those. But the chorus is so good that how many of you have walked away from this song going, wait, where's the rest? No one ever asked for the rest of the story.
Yeah.
You're singing your heart out to the chorus and then it's done.
And it's like you want it to be hopeful. And I know it's sort of supposed to be hopeful, but just reading it cold, like I had like a bit of a chuckle going through there and getting to the part where she's going to run away and she's crying all night and Tommy's like trying to make her feel better. I mean, it's gotten that bad. And then it's just more chorus. It's just more living on a prayer. There's not one thing in there that says this gets better. The song starts with them doing poorly and you leave them doing worse.
But it's the 80s and that hook, you're the bar singing.
I know.
You've never felt better in your life. Like when you get the entire bar, like this is Casablanca and you're singing the French national anthem overpowering the Nazis. Like there's nothing like getting an entire group of people to sing one song.
Yeah.
And for a lot of us, that is one of those songs, whether when you were a kid, whether you were in college, whether you're older now, and you just pop into a bar once in a while. When that song comes on, the whole room comes together. You forget what's happening in the story.
This and Journey's Don't Stop Believing are absolute destroyers.
Yeah.
The music video to this song does not even help it.
No.
Because it's just them in what? Like a giant LA amphitheater with like white light behind them. The most ridiculous video I've ever seen for a song that actually has a narrative.
Because I'm sure when they were at the video production, they're like, look, this is a great start to a narrative, but we're going to give him a music video with no ending. Yeah. I can't do this. Just have him sing in an auditorium.
Well, but that's what I don't understand. It's like, we clearly have just talked about two music videos that completely changed the dynamic of a song.
They could have fixed this in post.
Yeah, exactly.
They could have, at the end of the music video, it could have been something hopeful and happy, and then we would have married it with the song.
Yeah, it could have been at the very end, Tommy signing a contract to be a rock star or something. But nope, they didn't even want to do that. So you get what you get. So now every time you hear this song and you're so excited, just remember that the song you're singing is celebrating two people who probably have terrible lives.
But it's written by a guy and his wife who made it. And it's co-written by Desmond Child, who he had a girlfriend named Maria who worked at a bar called... The first line of the song is "Once upon a time, not so long ago." This place was called "Once upon a stove."
Yes, I did read that.
Her name was Maria, but she looked like some Italian actress that everyone would call her Gina. So that's where the name Gina comes in for the song.
Yeah. The only other note I had on here was that it's from the "Slippery When Wet" album, as referenced by Bill and Ted. And so,
other than that, this was a radio hit and I guess a video flop. But, I guess the video did well too. But
yeah.
Not a good video.
I didn't like it. Okay, so I think, you have the next one. Again.
Oh, okay.
I'm very excited about
all the hard work to Andy. Give all the hard work to Andy.
You wanted it. I don't know what to tell you. We started shuffling these all around. I had them in order, and then you were like, "Oh, you got all the good meat."
He did get all the good songs. He got all the good songs.
"I have the good meat," is what he said.
"My friends wonder why I call you all the time. What can I say? I don't feel the need to give such secrets away. You think maybe I need help, though I know I'm right, all right?
No, this is going wrong
I'm
right away.
I'm just better off not listening to friends' advice. When they insist on knowing my bliss, I tell them this. When they want to know what the reason is, I only smile when I lie. Then I tell them why. Because your kiss is on my list. Because your kiss is on my list. Because your kiss is on my list of the best things in life."
I do not even know what I just heard. This person sounds disturbed right out of the gate.
A little twisted, a little like...
He said a lot of things that I think amounted to nothing.
All we know is he's lying, but then he's not lying.
Yeah, he's lying. So
we know he's not going to give secrets away, and then he tells us the secret.
Well,
I'm telling you
something. So he's making... Notice how these songs have a lot of phone calls in them. You notice that?
It's the 80s.
A lot of late 80s had a lot of phone calls. So he's calling, again, what I'm assuming is a woman, and he's calling her way too much.
Yeah.
And even she thinks maybe he's disturbed.
Yeah. And he's trying to convince, like, no, not disturbed.
Like, his friends clearly see it. They're like, "Man, you call her way too much." And even she's like, Gregory, you call me way too much.
Well, then let's hear more of this phone call. Okay. "I go crazy wondering what there is really to see."
Oh, no.
"Did the night just take up your time because it means more to me? Sometimes I forget what I'm doing. I don't forget what I want. Regret what I've done, regret you, I can't go on. But if you insist on knowing my bliss, I'll tell you this. If you want to know the reason is, the only smile when I lie, I only smile when I lie, then I tell you this. Because your kiss is on my list."
Okay, so that's memoirs of a serial killer.
You know.
I don't even know where to go with this song if you read that to me, which you just did, and you told me to make a song out of that that's nice, I don't think I could do it. Like, if you were like, "I need you to take the lyrics of this and make it into something that is internationally loved."
Yeah. Well, and again, that the rest of the song now is just the chorus. The chorus goes on and on, the hook, whatever you want to call it.
And what song is that?
And this is "Kiss on My Lip," Hall & Oates.
Yes.
The number one dual
Kiss is on my list by Hall & Oates.
And again, when you hear the song, like most 80s songs that were anti-love songs, you think this is a love song. but it was written as an anti-love song.
That's what he says. But I think that, you know, people who think certain things are funny and you're like, I don't understand why you think this is funny. This is one of those moments where he calls it an anti-love song, but you're going to have to break that down for me.
But this song was co-written by Jenna Allen, mm-hmm. who was Daryl Hall's long time.
I'm going to jump in here for you.
Yeah, yes. you get here.
And you did more research on this than me, so I'm going to give you the full credit on this. But it was written by it was written for the intention of Jenna Allen, sister of Hall's longtime girlfriend, Sarah Allen.
Yeah, so this was going to be her song. Daryl Hall was helping her write the song. This was just a demo. Like, they never went past the demo.
Yeah.
But what ended up happening is while he was singing on the song, the rest of the band was like, you know, this is actually a good song.
Yeah.
And so she allowed them to release it instead of her. You know, her first time she wrote a song, and it's a Hall & Oates number one hit. So not too bad. But yeah, I don't know. Does it change? Does the song change when it's sung by a man instead of a woman? Would we look at the song differently? I don't know.
No, you know what? It would change. It would. And I'll tell you why. Because there is a long history, I think, that we've seen of there being a double standard with how intense women can be over love compared to men. So if this was sung by a woman and you did the exact same thing, in fact, go ahead, sing the opening part again, or say the opening part again, but let's pretend we are a lady.
My friends wonder why I call you all the time when I say I don't feel the need to give such secrets away. You think maybe I need help, though I know I'm right, all right. I'm just better off not listening to friends' advice.
See,
so this is yeah. If all your girlfriends are telling you this guy's no good, walk, get away from him.
Mm-hmm. See, this feels like the same thing for Whitney Houston.
Yeah,
I could absolutely see a group of like five women sitting at a table in New York, right, having brunch and discussing this, and they're like, "You call him all the time." And she's like, "Well, I don't know what to tell you. I like him. I think he's nice." You know, but when it's a man, there is a dynamic change where it becomes deeply creepy.
Yeah, yeah.
When you said, and I didn't know this, this was actually so cool. It's kind of what I like about doing this episode is that I learned interesting things about these songs that I think are so famous, you almost just don't go into them because they are hook songs.
Yeah.
You know, they aren't these grandiose power ballads that have a ton of history behind them. But each of these songs, we've been able to find something interesting about. And this one is no different in the fact that I didn't know that the song you hear on the radio is actually just the demo with a few more instruments layered over the top of it. They didn't even bother to re-record it. They got it in one.
And they nailed the demo so well that I think it's part one of the synth or some of the music in there. Eddie Van Halen was like, look, I love that synth part so well that I kind of stole that when I made the song Jump.
Yeah.
So this is a demo, Hall & Oates, and they're already inspiring other people also. Like these guys know how to put magic in a bottle.
Is it Daryl Hall? I have a quote here that says, I don't have a problem with that.
Exactly. He didn't mind at all. He's like, all right, you know. And again, Jenna Allen, she wrote this, then she wrote Private Eyes, another song.
I listened to that on the way over here. On the drive over to the shelter, I was listening to Private Eyes.
And then
Eyes.
I think she wrote like two other songs for the band, you know?
That song is so good.
Yeah. So, and her sister was a long-term partner with Hall. So, I mean, these guys knew how to just put it all together and also how to work with other people and collaborate. And that's, you know, you find that when the more you research a lot of these songs, you realize collaboration goes a long way. It's never just one. It takes a whole.
Yeah. And that is something I notice with a lot of these songs too, is rarely do you have somebody who just like sat in a room and produced this whole cloth all by themselves.
Well, because even that Whitney Houston song we just mentioned.
Yeah.
That was a cover of a Marilyn and Billy song. Marilyn McCoo and Billy Davis Jr. 78.
Oh, nice.
So that's a cover song. Just like I Will Always Love You. Of course, Dolly Parton.
Yeah.
But Whitney Houston, she knows how to like take these covers and own it.
Yeah.
You know, Dolly Parton says when she had Whitney Houston cover I Will Always Love You, she was like, yes, let her have it. And she, the song made her tons of money.
Yeah.
But like, you know, everyone's happy. Whitney Houston knows how to just, knows how to get into a song and just turn it into magic.
Oh, yeah.
And and songs that are already magical, that, because how many times you've heard cover songs and you're like, oh, that was not as good as the original. She can just elevate. And to do that with Dolly Parton, I mean, yeah. Just talent.
Well, and Dolly Parton's version too, which has a great history of what being a sort of a love letter song to her former manager when she had to like move on in her career.
She wrote that and Jolene the same day.
Yeah. Oh, like, no shit.
Yeah. I mean, Dolly was just all talent. Oh, but again, amazing. she just gave her, you know, she just knew how to like, she just knows how to write good songs. And there's people who can write really good songs and there's people who can sing those really well. You're not always the same person. Dolly, of course, can do both.
Yeah.
Whitney can take these covers and make them magic. And Hall & Oates, obviously they know how to write songs, but in all the hits that they've had, they also know how to collaborate and make even other better songs.
Yeah. And I think that is the cornerstone of an artist, is being able to be collaborative to make something better than your own skill.
Which is why you invited me on this podcast.
Exactly. I could not have done this by myself.
Let me pat myself on the back a little bit more.
Could you imagine me just... I'm already sick of my own voice when I have to edit these. Could you imagine me sitting here trying to make this interesting on my own? Ugh. Jesse is a friend. Yeah, I know he's been a good friend of mine. But lately, something's changed. It ain't hard to define. Jesse's got himself a girl, and I want to make her mine.
Wait a minute.
Wait, what now?
Huh?
Okay, just right out of the gate, getting a little hostile.
I love you starts off, I'm a friend, just to get you, I'm a friend. But, and you know, whenever anybody says, but, you know... I'm not a bad person. I'm his friend. But you know what? Something's changed lately.
Oh,
can I tell you?
That's like opening the song with, listen, I want you guys to understand, I never do this. But, okay, she's watching him with those eyes.
You know, because she's his girlfriend.
She's loving him with that body. I just know it. And he's holding her in his arms late at night. This is what this guy is spending his time with.
And not she's holding her at the body late at night. Late at night. Like, making a declaration.
Not 10 o'clock. We're talking 12:30 a.m.
A good friend. Good friend there.
Yes. You know I wish that I had Jesse's girl. Who's he saying this to? He's talking, you know, he's getting his hair cut.
Well, we're going to find out soon who he's talking to.
I wish that I had Jesse's girl. Where can I find a woman like that? Like, just asking for a friend. I play along with the charade. That doesn't seem to be a reason to change. You know, I feel so dirty when they start talking cute. I want to tell her that I love her, but the point is probably moot. So,
of course it's moot.
I'll tell you what, girl. Someone owns a thesaurus at home. So points for that.
And I want to know what the charade is.
Yes, he's certainly articulate. I know that I always thought that was funny too. I play along with the charade. Almost seems like she likes
like
him
in
back.
In his head?
Yes.
She knows she should be with him.
Totally.
But it's a charade. Oh, and you're all going to be so cutesy.
Oh,
and you're
going to
be so in love with him, but I know.
Yes. No.
This guy you just met.
Samesies. Wavelength. You know, yeah, I absolutely thought that was what he was going for in his own mind. Oh, because she's watching him with those eyes, as we have established, and she's loving him with that body. I just know it. That is such a great line.
He's so mad.
And he's like, he's sitting there, he's wringing his hands. He just knows that she's loving him. And he's holding her in his arms late at night, as we know. For some reason, that line makes me think of Taco Bell commercials.
Late at night.
I know... I wish that I had I wish that I had Jesse's girl. I wish that I had Jesse's girl. Where can I find a woman like that? Like Jesse's girl, I wish that I had Jesse's girl. I am looking in the mirror all the time.
So this is him. He's looking in the mirror. This is the song. He's singing to himself looking in the mirror.
That's what I'm assuming. Wondering what she doesn't see in me. I kind of feel bad for him at that point. I've been funny. I've been cool with the lines. Ain't that the way love's supposed to be?
See, now I see you. You feel sorry for him. I've lost him because this is one of those guys who's like, I've done everything right, so you should like me. This isn't on her, dude. Yeah. This is you.
No, okay.
Just because you did all those right things.
See, I'm back. Like, if you didn't let me finish. If I did the first two lines, okay. Oh, I'll feel bad.
But then he takes it too far.
Well, but then now he thinks that like getting a lady is just being funny and doing lines. You know.
Yeah.
Well, it was the 80s. They were doing a lot of lines, but just being cool with the lines. And it's like, that's what you think love is supposed to be? Are you 12?
You know.
Like, you're a grown man.
And remember, like he says at the very beginning, Jesse is a friend of his.
Yeah.
You know? But
this, let's couch this all in friendship.
I never do this. This is my friend.
Anyway, so that is Jesse's Girl, Rick Springfield, 1980. Just an absolute wonder of a song. I mean, it really is. I genuinely enjoy this song, but when you break down these lyrics, man, there's a lot there.
And this is a song, when you listen to it, you are aware, you do know he wants Jesse's girl. You know, he's pining over his best friend's girl. That part you pick up right away when you listen to the song.
Sure.
But you don't get into some of this minutia.
Yeah.
You know, like at no part did I remember he's looking in a mirror being like, I did everything right. She should be mine. Like, whoa, buddy.
It is great because a lot of these songs, as you can tell, like they do get weirder as you go along because obviously your brain kind of tunes out. Yeah, you get the first couple of lyrics, right? Jesse's a friend. You know, he's been a good friend of mine. And then it's like from there, it kind of goes blah, 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 in your mind. You don't get to the middle part. And then you certainly don't get all the way down. I'm looking in the mirror, right?
Yeah.
And like, that part was honestly when I finally started reading these lyrics, that was hilarious to me because I had forgotten all of that part.
Yeah.
I didn't remember any of that. Being cool with the lines. What a great lyric.
See, and then this song is interesting because if I'm going to bring this up and you might cut it out, but Real Big Fish, 1998, they do what? Ready to Rock, the second album.
Well, yeah, the second album, Why Do They Rock So Hard?
And that album, he definitely kind of plays the bad guy persona and things. And when you, and in his song, I Want Your Girlfriend to Be My Girlfriend.
Yeah.
But where Rick Springfield is singing it, like, you should be my girlfriend, like, I want my best friend's girlfriend. Like, this Real Big Fish version is very much like, I want your girlfriend to be my girlfriend. She should be my girlfriend. Maybe I need to kill you to make her my girlfriend. Like, he goes straight. Like, he takes it as a straight song. Not just, like, in the window, I'm a good guy. Why isn't she with me?
There is a softness, a melancholy, sort of like a G. Willikers kind of point to this Rick Springfield song where, yeah, the one from Real Big Fish is straight up skater asshole aggressive.
Yeah.
Right, for sure.
It's just an interesting if you wanted to put the two together. Again.
Yeah. No, and here's what I think is great about this song. Now, again, I don't think that I watched the Jesse Girl video. Did you watch the video for this?
I didn't, no.
I did not watch the video for this either. But something that I did look up that I really liked was Rick Springfield did have a real Jesse. Her name wasn't Jesse. He was in an art class. There was a girl that he liked, and she was dating a guy he knew named Gary. And he wanted to date this girl, but his somewhat of a buddy, Gary, was already dating the lady. And so he said, like, after about a year or something, he fell out of touch with both of them. But in the meantime, in that in-between area, he decided to kind of pen out a song about what would it be to be a guy who liked your best friend's gal.
Gary was a somewhat friend of mine. No, that doesn't really work.
I know. I really wish he'd stuck with Gary. But that's just one of those little bits of trivia that, you know, just fun to know. So now every time you're going down the street and you immediately hear Jesse is a friend, you're going to go, Gary is a friend.
And you're going to imagine him singing the song to himself in the mirror.
Yes.
Like,
yeah, my hope that when you guys go away from this is that these have been ruined for you forever. These songs.
Until the hook comes in and then you'll forget everything we said because magical 80s hooks.
Yes.
Well, you'll absolutely. This will all be wiped away. Men in Black, you forget what's going on. I don't know. You can't fight the 80s hook.
No. This is the song that kind of inspired the whole show. So I'm going to read these to you, Andy, and you just react how you'd normally react to somebody saying something terrifying.
Oh, I mean, I can't sure. imagine this is so crazy. Let's
go. Okay. You were working as a waitress in a cocktail bar when I met you. I picked you out. I shook you up and turned you around, turned you into someone new. Now, 5 years later on, you've got the world at your feet. Success has been so easy for you. But don't forget, it's me who put you where you are now, and I can put you back down too.
Whoa, is this Harvey Weinstein? What is this?
That started nice, right?
And then quickly goes dark.
Yeah, it was like, okay, I turned you around, and it's like, that's cool. Okay, that's, and then, oof, there at the end, that got real.
That's a Hollywood producer. I made you, I break you.
Yeah, like the classic, I made you, I can break you.
Whoa, oof, okay.
And you're thinking to yourself, so even if I don't know what this song is, I know for a fact that these guys are reading the lyrics to a very famous 80s, like pop song.
And you might have got it on the first few lines, but you might not remember the last few lines.
Yeah, as you know, your brain always ends up having rot. So don't you want me? You know I can't believe it when I hear that you won't see me. Don't you want me? You know I don't believe you when you say that you don't need me.
Let's look at this, like just this right here. In the chorus, it starts off with, believe it when I hear it. And then he changed it. The only two lines he changes is, you know I don't believe you when you say it. So obviously people have told him she doesn't want you. She doesn't want to be around you. You've now confronted her and she's telling you she doesn't want you.
And you're refusing.
And you refuse to believe it. If other people tell you, if the source tells you, this is what kind of guy we're dealing with.
This is ostrich buried in the sand. Behavior, but it gets can I tell you it gets better? This gets so much better. It's much too late to find when you think you've changed your mind. You'd better change it back or we will both be sorry.
Whoa. Like, this is
what does that even mean?
I mean, that's a very abusive relationship.
Yeah, I have pored over this lyric before in my mind, and I understand when people say you'll be sorry, but what is he going to do to this woman where they both will be sorry?
Yeah.
I mean, how is he going to do something that has blowback for him? Oof, I feel like a jail cell is coming for this guy. And then it's, don't you want me, baby? Don't you want me, oh? Don't you want me, baby? Don't you want me, oh? Okay.
So even if you heard that last line and you're like, oh, then when the hook comes in again, Magical Ladies, if you've ever heard this song, you lost it again. You're like, oh.
Yeah, whatever he just said, even that deeply threatening thing, that's just out of your mind.
So now, does she get a say in this at all?
So there is a great thing about this song. It almost sounds like you've heard this before.
I've never heard it before at all.
You're reading is me this there is an interesting rebuttal. Not the one I'd like, can I tell you, but this is the one you get. I was working as a waitress in a cocktail bar. That much is true. Okay, a little he said, she said.
Okay.
Okay. But even then, I knew I'd find a much better place, either with or without you.
So she could have made it on her own. Like, he's taking all the credit, but she's saying, wait a minute, we did some of this together, but I was going to do, okay.
That's how I'm feeling on this. So the 5 years we have had has been such good at times.
At times.
Yeah. Oof. I feel like there's some trigger language going on where somebody might want to step in.
Okay. At times it was good in 5 years.
I still love you, but now I think it's time I live my life on my own. I guess it's just what I must do.
And after his last line, you get that. Like, girl, run.
Yeah, I guess my question in there is, I guess it's just what I must do? Like, no one is making you do anything. Yeah, is it what you'd like
this
to
is,
do?
Matt, this is an abusive relationship.
Oh, absolutely.
Like, she still loves him. There were some good times.
Yeah.
You know, and in any other song, oh, baby, I'll change. Baby, this guy's not even saying he'll change. He's saying.
No, that's what I'm picking up in this. So, definitely is the undertones of that when she's saying the part where she says, I still love you. Oof, that hits you in your guts in a bad way.
But she's running.
Right?
Get out of there. Get away from this guy.
Yeah, well, and then what's funny is it goes back and it does the don't you want me, baby, all over again as we did. And then it's him again saying, it's much too late to find when you think you've changed your mind. You'd better change it back or we will both be sorry. So he actually gets the last word in all of this. Which just closes
this
out.
This is like a Dear Stan song.
Oh my gosh. This is like a narcissist anthem. Okay. So this was Don't You Want Me Baby, The Human League, 1981.
Now, some interesting fact about this song.
I do not have any interesting facts.
Okay.
So this song. I am glad that you brought something.
Yeah. So the song is very self-aware. Like Phil Oakey, who wrote the song, he actually got inspired. He was looking at some teen magazine. And I guess it was some photo essay.
Mm-hmm.
And so he wrote a song about, you know, what he calls the power politics of opposite sex. He's like, this is not a love song. This is not autobiographical. This is an anti-love song.
Another anti-love song.
So he writes it. And originally he just wrote it for just him to sing. But
sure.
After he watched A Star is Born in 1976, he thought it would actually be stronger as a duet. So then he writes the song. But he actually intended the song to be more intense. The synth and the music was going to be a lot stronger, a lot in your face. The producers at Virgin, they took the song and they remixed it.
Okay, so
they toned it down a lot.
So that if I'm understanding what you said, so they had recorded it, perhaps.
They recorded the song.
And then they went in and they actually remixed the entire sound.
Yeah, they remixed. They took some of his synth music out, which was going to be, I guess, a more intense song.
Okay.
And they actually made it more poppy. They made it what he calls, he says they weakened the song down. He was so upset when this happened that he made them put the song as the very last track of the album.
Mm-hmm.
He was very upset. He thought this, if people heard the song, they were going to think they were just this weak poppy band. They actually had released three singles before this song that did okay.
Yeah.
And then the record company insisted. They're like, no, we really want to put the song out as a single. We think it's going to be a hit. And so they did. The rest is history. It became this big, huge song. I think he still hates it. And I can kind of see why. Like, there's a part of me where he wrote this song as this, like, I mean, it's a very dark song.
Yeah.
And then he shows up at the club, and people in the 80s are just dancing to this.
Yeah,
they're not listening to it. They don't really care.
There is so much
poppy
celebration behind what is definitely a dark song, like a menacing song,
to
be honest.
It'd be interesting to hear what this song would sound like with the original music in.
I would love that.
I don't know if that's out there or not.
Yeah, because the little that I did know about the Human League is that they were experimental synth pop.
Yeah.
And so
them,
this is a huge departure.
The people who brought that out.
I think from what they had originally done. And it's probably why you don't hear much more about them or why they didn't have like maybe a second song that sort of breach the echelon that this one did is because everything else was that
just
much
darker,
more stick to their guns,
more
synth pop, experimental work.
And when you say more darker, it's like the other music was darker, but this song was pretty dark as we've revealed.
Well, lyrically, this song is dark.
When you change the background and you make it poppy, it showed in the 80s, you'll dance to anything.
Yeah.
And we still do. So.
I would be interested to see what this song has like been layered over in pop culture, where the people putting it on there didn't examine it at all, right? Just said, oh, this is a popular 80s song, and so we're going to put this over it. And then when you contrast the lyrics to what's being shown on screen or what it's connected to, it's very inappropriate.
Have you seen the music video for this?
This I have, yeah.
Yeah.
So did you end up watching it?
I ended up watching the music video also, yeah.
Yeah, so...
this one, I really... After watching 8675309, I really wanted to see what they did with this music video.
Yeah, and it's weird because I had texted you after I watched it. I was like, there is some Inception shit going on here. There is like a story and a story and a story. And the basic premise which you can elaborate more on if I don't understand it. It's basically just, from what I saw, is
they're making a movie.
They're making a movie.
Or the music video, something. They're making something.
So it's like, let me try this again because I said a bunch of things. It looks like in the video they are making a movie. But then within that movie,
there's some friction.
There's friction on set. But then you find out that they're actually filming a movie about people making a movie music video.
And even the movie they're filming, the guy pulls a gun out of his glove box. Like, it's like this, it's like Phil Oakley. It's like this lead singer is trying to remind you, this is sinister. Whoa. You're all dancing to a very sinister song.
Yes. And then in the final shots, if I remember, it's like the camera actually goes backwards and then like goes into a mirror.
Yeah.
To show you that all the things you just saw, we know we're being filmed as well.
Yeah.
Like we're filming the music video of people filming a thing.
Which again, could be psychologically like abusive, could be like that, those mind games, the little tricks.
If you're being the most charitable you can be about the creation of it, you're like, yeah, this is almost like layers of gaslighting. You know, you aren't really seeing what you're seeing.
And just like the 80s, classic 80s, even in the music video where you're trying to reveal to the public, listen to the lyrics, this is a creepy song. In 80s fashion, the hook is so strong, it all just gets washed away. And it's still a dance song and no one's paying attention.
Yep, no one cares.
You could. There's so much examples in the 80s that you could do that.
Well, I think that we've come to the end of our music treasure trove here. I think we did a pretty good job, to be honest.
I was a little hesitant at first when you came up with this idea, but I had a lot of fun researching it, and I think this was a lot of fun.
Yeah, hopefully everyone out there, you know, got something new and interesting they can tell their friends about, right? You're in the car and you, oh, by the way, did you know?
Yeah, you know, next time everyone's in the car dancing and having fun, you know, you could light it and ruin the moment for everybody.
See, I used to do that to my wife all the time. Yeah. She's just trying to listen to a nice song. And I was like,
let me have a Daria moment here.
Yeah,
and
what
he just
said actually is like really disgusting in context when you think about it. But I thank you, Andy, for letting me do this. Now you get to pick an episode that is off the wall that I will go along with 100%.
And all these songs were rent for me, I thought, as I've been researching this, until I listened to them. And again, the hook and chorus take me away, and I watched it all away. So these songs will still
live in infamy. I think that's what you'll find, actually. Like, if you listen to this all the way through and you go back out in the real world, you're going to hear that hook and you're going to forget all the things we said immediately. Like, you're going to completely forgive everything we said here, and these songs are going to live in your heart the way they did before.
However, every once in a while, one of these lines is going to slip through and you're going to be like, oh, he's looking in the mirror. Oh,
I knew you were going to say that. The one that will always stick in my head is or when he says point is probably moot.
See, I've always heard it as the point is always mute.
Yeah.
Until I read it and then I'm like, moot. Okay. All right.
It's moops.
Yeah. All right, Rhymesosaurus. Like,
it's Moors. God's a misprint. I listened to that episode the other day, putting my son's bed together.
Very nice.
Bubble Boy's the best. Well, guys, we are going to get out of here. We want to thank My Pet Monster for setting our levels today. He's doing a really good job, to be honest, better than I did.
Although the next episode might sound better.
Yeah. We don't want to brag, but we might be getting a bit of new equipment. The boys might be upgrading. So, you know, just stick with us through this episode. And next time, we'll probably give your ears a little treat.
If you don't hear this part of the podcast, it means it didn't arrive in shipping yet, and we'll put it on to the next one.
Yeah, if we sound exactly the same the next time, something happened. But I want to quickly plug the socials. We'd really like for you guys to come over to our Instagram, shelter.from.oblivion. I'm just adding the dots in there because that's the official name, but I know if you search for us, we're like the only one that comes up.
For now.
Yeah. And until all the clones come out, because we spit so much fire.
It's inevitable.
But it's also the same thing over on our Facebook. Those are the only two we have right now. We haven't really gone into X, and we don't have anything on TikTok. We might have a discussion about that in the future.
If it's still around.
Yeah, that's true. True. As the recording of this right now, it is still up. But it's kind of a good place where we're thinking about maybe putting show clips in the future. But really, we would love to know, are you loving the show? If you are, please give us a review. It definitely helps, especially with Apple. I think you've probably heard that from other podcasts. Giving reviews, leaving comments, letting us know how we're doing. It's super helpful. Hearing back from you guys about what you like is awesome. It really helps us and inspires us to just come back here every week and come up with new, more interesting, fun things for you guys to hear about.
And it gives our wives a break from all of our random facts that we collect and they don't want to hear about.
That's the number one thing. I just didn't know if I could say it. So until next time, we are Matt
and Andy.
And this is Shelter from Oblivion, and we'll see you guys later.